Hey there, sit down, make yourself comfortable, and grab a cup of tea. Welcome to the 123rd episode of Thea's Tea. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome back, everybody. It's good to have you here. Sorry for missing last week's episode. If you are not aware, I posted on the Instagram at Thea's Tea Podcast that there would be no episode because I was on break. I had a week off, and so all of my routine got kind of disrupted. I took a trip to Madrid, which I'll talk to you about in the life update section. But yeah, everything was kind of disrupted, and so I didn't want to record an episode. We bend so we don't break. That's what I remind myself. But yeah, we're back here this week with a new episode. For this tea talk, we have the perfect combination, or at least my favorite combination. It is apple cinnamon tea, which is my favorite all-time flavor. I'm actually very excited because my family is coming to visit me in a few weeks and they're bringing me my favorite teas from Colombia. So I can't wait. I'm drinking this tea, which is from the brand Elephant, which is, I'd say, my go-to tea brand here in France. So there's that. And the mug I'm drinking it in is, of course, the custom Thea's Tea mug that my best friend Jose gifted me for the 1 year anniversary of Thea's Tea, which is actually the 3 year anniversary of Thea's Tea is coming soon. Wow. It's on April 28th, if I'm not mistaken. We will see. So yeah, that's basically what I'm drinking. So the weather here has actually been not that okay. First of all, I'm so excited because in less than a month, it's spring. I have had enough of winter. It was fun the first week. It was fun the only day it snowed. And now I don't see the point of this. And even though, like, here in Bordeaux, it's not that cold even. But, like, oh my gosh, I'm fed up. I don't like this anymore. I can't wait for it to be warm again. But this week, it's been actually pretty warm. Like, it's been up to 18 degrees. But then it's gonna be colder again next week and for the couple of weeks after. So I can't enjoy this too much. But all of this is to say that I wanted a cozy, comforting flavor of tea. I accidentally added too much sugar, and you can tell. But it's okay. That's the tea, and it's yummy. I'm happy to be drinking it for this episode. As for the setup, as I'm recording, it's currently a Tuesday night. It's about to be 10 p.m. I'm recording this episode on my little dining table. I'm wrapped up in a blanket. Everything is good. I'm recording it a bit later than I would like to, but this weekend was a little bit hectic and today I didn't have that much class. So I figured I would take the time to record the podcast today. Life update. Okay, so as I mentioned in the tea talk, it's late. My brain is shutting down. So as I mentioned in the tea talk, I went to Madrid. It was so much fun. I had a week off from school, so I went to visit a friend of mine that I've known since Colombia and who is living in Madrid now, you know, studying. And it was so fun. I cannot explain to you how, like, bewildering it is to visit, like, a childhood friend and they're living in a completely new city. You're living in a completely new city. They're an adult, you know, they've set up their life as an adult, and you get to live a few days in their life, but, like, you met when you were, like, different people, you know, like, you had different preoccupations. Like, it was so mind-blowing. It was so fun. I don't know, it was just, like, so nice to spend time with somebody who fully understood what I was going through, you know, who fully experienced, like, a similar contrast from Medellin to Europe. And yeah, it was just really fun spending a few days, like, in a completely different routine, doing things completely differently with people my age, exploring a city that I had never been in yet felt so familiar. I feel like that's the best way to describe it, just because, you know, it has, like, the European charm that I've been experiencing for the past few months, but it has, like, all the comfort and familiarity of Spanish, you know, culture and, like, the language. And I just feel like even though Latin America is very different to Spain, there are many, like, common traits and, like, common cultural things that made me feel very at home. So it was a great experience. We did a bunch of touristy things. I'll mention some of them if you're curious. So for museums, we went to El Prado and Reina Sofia. I personally preferred Reina Sofia, but that's probably influenced by the fact that I went through it with much more, like, calm. Like, I took my time. I read everything as I like to do in museums. And I loved the fact that it had contemporary exhibitions. So it obviously had like some of the classics, but it also has like collections that are constantly switching out and that are like political or social statements. So that was just really interesting for me. I really enjoyed it. Other typical things we did were go to El Parque del Retiro, which I loved. It's a huge, beautiful park. And there's a bunch to see in it, but one of the like most notorious things is El Palacio de Cristal, which is just basically like a building that has glass everywhere. I regret not going in, but I don't know, like, I don't know what's so cool about it. I don't know why everybody who goes takes pictures there, but I was definitely like charmed by it. I don't know, it was really cool. We also went on Sunday to the market El Rastro, which is just kind of like a huge flea market at very cheap prices, and I got like a bunch of knickknacks there, so that was really fun. Restaurants that we went to, there was one called Owen, like oven, and it's like Italian, and it was so nice. I loved it. It had this amazing pizza called La Mallorquina. If you go, you should definitely get it. It was very good, and I love the ambiance of this restaurant. We also went to Cien Montaditos, which is like a typical Spanish restaurant, and it just has like a bunch of snacks, and I loved that one too. I don't know, it was just so nice to get a quick little bite. And one of my favorite things of Spain was the tinto de verano, which is basically wine with like sparkly water and lemon, and it just tastes so good. I would drink that over beer any day, and it was just, I don't know, it's just such a nice beverage. I wish I can drink it, you know, in the sun, in the summer. So yeah, that was very nice. Also, another restaurant that I loved was Tierra. It's Mexican, and I don't know if it's every day, but they have like a happy hour where they give you this huge tray of nachos with generous amounts of guacamole, pico de gallo, sour cream, and I don't know what else, and a liter of margaritas, and you can like split it between people. So that was great. There are no good Mexican places here in Bordeaux, so that's shattering, but I was so happy to eat that over there. Those were my recommendations in restaurants. Other sightseeing things that I did in Madrid were go to Plaza Mayor, the Mercado de San Miguel. That's like a market, you know, where they have like food. It's kind of expensive, but you know, it's nice to just go walk around, see everything. Like, literally, that's all I did. But if you want to purchase something, of course you can. And then the other big thing was we went to El Palacio Real, so like the Royal Palace. We could not go in, unfortunately, but yeah, I hope to go back and go in, because from what I've seen, like, it's really pretty on the inside. Like, there are paintings, like, it's a palace, you know? And then next to that are, like, the gardens, which you can kind of, like, look over to. That was kind of underwhelming, sorry, to be honest. And yeah, as for the prices of, like, these things, the museums I got into for free, because if you're a student under 25, you can usually get in free for museums from, like, it doesn't matter that I don't go to a Spanish university, like, they still let me in. And the Royal Palace is free, like, at some parts of the day. It has, like, a more complex schedule. But otherwise, like, even if you are a student, you pay less. But there are moments where it's completely free. So, yeah, that was just, like, a side note on that. Overall, my trip was so fun. I already said how fun it was to be with my friend and just, like, see her being all grown up and see me being all grown up and just, like, thinking in my head, like, our dynamic, you know, when we were still living at our parents. Like, I don't know, it was just bewildering to me, but it was so fun. And that was the most part of my break. Yeah, and then I just got back here and started preparing for my return to classes, which is what I've had. And yeah, you know, I've been studying, obviously getting back into the groove of things. I'm happy with like the way the semester is looking for me, but I feel like overall I have had better like academic self-esteem than I did last semester. But I don't know, today particularly things just got like a little bit hard, so I was starting to doubt myself again academically. And honestly, like, doubting yourself academically is exhausting. Like, it's so annoying to be doing things like all day every day yet not feeling entirely capable. Like, it's so annoying. So yeah, I'm just trying to like shift my mindset, you know, promise myself that I'm doing everything I need to do. I'm putting in the work. I feel like I'm working more than most people around me, honestly. And I just need to keep up with that. And eventually the results will show. And yeah, you know, it's, I feel like I'm constantly fighting with myself, because it's like a part of me wants to do things really well. And another part of me is sometimes like, oh, you don't need to completely understand that, you know, just apply the formula. And another part is like, oh, you'll just read over it when you get home. So like, just copy here and don't focus on understanding. So yeah, it's kind of exhausting, but I'm trying to navigate through that. It would be terrible if I felt like this for all of my, you know, like academic career. So I'm just trying to find a place where I believe in myself and where I feel like I'm doing well. So yeah, I'm supposed to be getting my results from like finals soon. And I don't know how to feel about that. I'm very scared. Very nervous. So yeah, we'll see. But that's all I have to report for these past 2 weeks. That's basically what has been going on in my life. This week's episode is a Q&A. So if you want to participate in the upcoming Q&As, make sure to follow the Instagram at Deasty Podcast. That's where I'll usually collect the questions. But if you also want to leave a question right now and you don't want to wait until I ask again, if you're listening on Spotify, there's an option for, there's like a Q&A box. So if you want to leave questions here for the next Q&A, go ahead and do so. I'll be sure to check again and include your questions. But yeah, feel free to drop any questions here for the next Q&A, or if while I'm answering a question, you like it sparks an idea for you, or you want to hear more about something, be sure to drop it in this Q&A section. Without further ado, let's begin. Kirsten asks, how do you take notes for a science subject? So I love this because honestly, I haven't been like struggling, but I've asked myself this a lot. And I love seeing how other people in STEM take notes, because I feel like it's really different to how I would take notes in high school, especially just in college. The way classes are structured is really different. And especially in France, it's a very different system, because people here are more used to literally the teacher telling you what to write down, and people will only write down what the professor copies on the board. Whereas in Colombia, I was very much taught to do that work like on like by myself, and really just get into the habit of taking in what the professor was saying and deciding for myself what was important and what I should write down, and prioritizing, because you obviously can't write down everything. So to give you a bit of an answer regarding how I do this right now, I must explain that the way many schools do like college classes is that they have lectures and then like recitations or tutorials. And so in STEM, what that looks like is you get lectures where the general theory is presented to you, and they kind of explain all the background, you know, very like abstract concepts. And that's what's tricky, because they explain to you like all of these big terms, all of these, yeah, it's a lot of information, and you're not really sure like what's going to be useful for this. You don't really have an idea of what exercises and problems regarding this can look like. So yeah, you're kind of like trying to write down anything that can be useful. And then the tutorials are where you do exercises where you solve problems. You know, you have like a problem set and you solve them, whether it's the teacher on the board or students going up and doing them. And then you just have to like copy down the answers and the processes and like the math. So in lectures or in like presentations in general, I was taught something that I feel like is the key. And basically when you're deciding what to write down, because obviously, you know, you've got a presentation on like the projector, you've got the teacher saying things, and maybe he's also writing things on the board. So there's a lot and you can't copy everything. So what I was taught to prioritize is what the professor is saying, because the slides, you can get them back, they'll probably send them to you, but what the professor is saying, you won't get like a register of it. So you should really prioritize that. And the PowerPoint is supposed to be a visual aid, but it's also meant to be support for the professor. When the professor was making the PowerPoint presentation, they were thinking like, okay, these are the most important things I need to remember. And kind of like when I see them doing giving my presentation, I'll remember everything I need to explain and what I want to go more in depth. So Yeah, not only is it like meant to be visual help for you, but a good presentation is also meant to be the support and the outline for the person who's giving the presentation. So the speaker will naturally follow the flow of the presentation and will go more in depth to the things that like turn on that light bulb in the presentation. So if you just like copy down based on what the professor is saying, you'll naturally follow the flow of the presentation and you'll be writing down like the more important details, the things that are like maybe not so obvious that the professor had to like explain for you to be able to grasp. So yeah, that's what I try to do. I try to like really just follow what the professor is saying and write that down. And it's confusing because sometimes I'll be like in such a hurry that it's easier for me to just write things in English, even though the professor is speaking in French. But I do like to do it in French because like, you know, it's more of a challenge and the class is in French after all. And it's an opportunity for me to improve my French. But sometimes when I'm in a really big rush and things just start naturally appearing on the piece of paper in English, then I'm okay with that. Obviously, to gain time, if you have like abbreviations or little ways that you can cut down words, that can also help you like write things down quicker. And if the professor writes something on the board, it's probably because it's like a visual aid or a calculation that's not directly on the slides. So I'll take care to copy that as well. And another general piece of advice for taking notes in lectures is that I don't care too much about making it pretty. I mean, I will try to add some colors here and there. I always highlight formulas because when I'm solving the problems and I go back to my lecture notes, the formulas are probably what's most useful. So I'll try to see what off the bat I can tell is going to be important and make extra emphasis on that. But yeah, I just care about it being like comprehensible and it doesn't have to be super pretty or super aesthetic. I think that sometimes when the notes are a little bit messier, it means that you're truly doing the process of like understanding and like connecting the dots. So I'd be wary of notes that are too pretty. And then when you're in your tutorials, what I do is pretty straightforward. You're meant to go there with the exercises already done. So if I see that the solution is pretty similar to what I had done beforehand, then I'll just like write check marks next to it or erase the things that I got wrong or like circle my mistakes and do it kind of as if I'm grading an exam. But if the solution is completely different to what I had done, or maybe there are things that are correct, but I have to look in deeper to spot my mistakes, what I do is I keep like my solution and I just rewrite the correct solution on another piece of paper to have like the correction, but also have what I had done in the beginning if I ever want to look back on it and truly like analyze it. So yeah, that's my advice. When you're in tutorials, I feel like it's more straightforward because it's just rewriting the math and I'll try to make myself like little notes. And if there are things that I don't understand in the class, I'll like write a star or a question mark next to them. And then when I'm going over it back home, you know, like try extra hard to understand that. But yeah, lectures are where I feel taking notes is the hardest. And even if I feel like the teacher is just reading off the slides, so according to my logic, I wouldn't need to like write that much because he's literally just saying what's on the PowerPoint, I still write because otherwise I will not be paying attention. Writing and taking notes is what makes sure that I'm paying attention to what's going on. So I'll still try to do that even if the professor isn't saying anything that groundbreaking. I just feel like it's a good habit and it helps you memorize things as you go. Naima asks, what are your favorite podcasts that give you inspiration? Honestly, I struggled a bit with this question because I listen to podcasts a lot. I listen to quite a few different podcasts, but out of all of those, very few are for inspiration. I listen to podcasts for a lot of things, but I don't usually turn to them for inspiration. So to answer your question, I do want to mention one that does kind of inspire me, and it's called the That Girl Guide. Maybe you've seen on TikTok just kind of like the trend of being that girl. I have an entire episode on this, but it's basically a person who has her life very together, you know, juggles everything, works out, eats healthy, is organized, is like working hard, all of that. And this podcast basically tackles like how to become that in like different aspects. So, you know, how to deal with like relationships, how to deal with school, you know, she gives like pep talks, self-care, you know, she really like every episode she tackles a different aspect of life and how to approach it as that girl. And I just feel like it is so uplifting, and Ellie, the host, is so kind. She has such a big heart. You can tell that she is just so sweet, and that's really transmitted, you know, through her episodes. They feel very comforting, and she really does speak through her experience and her journey, so it's very inspiring to hear how she has overcome obstacles, or how her perspective towards certain things has shifted, or how she's grown, how she's evolved. And since it's so like experience-based, she shares just really concrete advice and tips that you can put into practice in your own life. So yeah, I guess if there were a podcast that inspires me, it's definitely this one, because it just motivates me to live a better life. Marcela asks, how do you take decisions about your future? An episode comes to mind where I really picked this apart, and it was the biggest decision I've ever had to make, where I just talked about like the pros and cons of moving to France. It's linked in the show notes along with everything else I mentioned in this episode if you want to go check it out. But I would say that is the approach I take towards any big decision in my life. And I know like it's the most basic piece of advice, pro and con lists, blah, blah, blah. But I do find myself applying that regularly. For instance, at the beginning of the semester, I was questioning whether or not I wanted to switch my minor. And a pro-con list is what helped me decide. I ended up switching from math to computer science. And I feel like this works very well for people like me, because I try to really structure things. And I like having in front of me like all the implications I want to consider, right? So doing that in like the column form of a pro and con list really helps me with that. Something that I have tried, and like, no, I've only thought about this, but it's like really crazy, so I've never actually done it, is like assigning numerical points to the elements like on your lists, and seeing like which one wins, you know, numerically, like which side has a higher score. But that's just so hard. How are you going to attribute like a numerical value to like these abstract concepts, you know? At the end of the day, that's just kind of like a tool to establish how much any like a given item matters to you, but you don't need a specific number to know how much that is, you know, if it's a lot or if it's a little. And the reason I wanted to introduce this is because, you know, on a list, like not everything has the same weight, you know, like when you're writing a pros and cons list, some things are really more important than others. And so I didn't like the fact that they were like all ranked equally. But yeah, the point system seems a little bit too radical. But my point is, I always do just try to analyze like the consequences of each side. And I feel like I'm an autonomous person, but when it comes to big decisions, I love consulting with people in my life. So I'll talk to a few close friends whose criteria I really value and who I know can always give me feedback that maybe I hadn't thought of myself, or I just feel like they have a really good compass in life and like they're going to orient me in the right direction. So friends and family, or people that I know have been through the same thing. For instance, when I was deciding whether or not to move here, I talked to people that had moved from Colombia to hear kind of their experience. So yeah, a pros and cons list, talking to people and hearing their opinions. And something else that I like to do kind of on the spot, or usually I try to do with others, is you do the trick where if you have two options, you take a coin and you assign each of those options to one side of the coin and you flip it. And you take this very seriously, because whatever side comes up, you want to analyze your reaction towards that, you know? So you want to know how you feel in the instant where kind of like this decision is made for you. And if you feel happy or excited or positively towards this, then it means that's probably the right decision. If on the other hand, you feel kind of weary or you feel let down, then maybe that's an indicator that you should have gone the other way. And this is a simulation, obviously, to help you decide which way to go. Although I must clarify that the best decision, or the most convenient one, or the one that you should take, won't maybe always necessarily, what was that, feel like the comfortable one, like the happy one. I sure know that's how I felt about moving to France. It felt scary. A part of me didn't want to, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't the right decision for me. I feel like any good decision for you or any good path will kind of launch you outside of your comfort zone. So it will feel a little bit scary, a little bit out of nature, and that doesn't mean it's the wrong path. So that's kind of like my general advice and some quick pointers as to how to make big decisions. Grace from Grace's Space asks, what's your approach on taking risks in career / relationships, etc.? Okay, so I mean, taking risks in general is very broad, and I feel like it varies a lot from situation to situation. Even just like analyzing career and relationships, I'm having trouble to find like a general sort of like approach. So I'm going to tackle each one individually. First, career, which is kind of what I was talking about in the previous question. I feel like you can take a very methodical approach to this with the pros and cons, as I said earlier, and really career is something that is entirely based on you. So imagining a couple of years down the line, how you picture your life, if this career risk seems like it will get you closer to where you want to be, or it will enrichen you. So that's kind of like what I recommend when thinking about like there's a new job offer, but it's a risk because it doesn't pay as much, but it's going to get you closer to the field that you want to be in. Or there's a job that you really like, but it requires you to move and you're happy where you are. You know, for those types of things, I feel like you can adopt the things that I discussed in the past question. Because obviously risks are scary and there's something new. And I feel like thinking about it too much kind of defeats the purpose of it being a risk, you know. But obviously, if you have like the chance, which you usually will, I feel like you should take the opportunity to really think things through and just put a lot of intention into these decisions that you're making that will have a big impact on you. Now, if you want to analyze under relationships, when you tell me like risks in relationships, the first thing that comes to mind for me is long distance. And I don't know if this is because I've been thinking about this a lot in my personal life recently, or I've just been hearing it a lot. But I feel like going long distance is one of the biggest risks you can take in a relationship. And regarding that specific situation, I think that going long distance is worth it if you can envision a future where you will be back together, like in the same physical space. I don't think any couple that goes into long distance goes into it with the intent of staying long distance forever. I feel like, you know, if you're in a relationship with somebody, the ultimate goal is to build that relationship nearby. There are some exceptions, but I feel like mostly you don't want to stay long distance forever. Or at least that's my case. So if you're in a relationship where there's really no way that your paths will cross again, I don't see why going long distance will be worth it. For example, if I were to fall in love with somebody from my hometown in Medellin, and you know, they like are there, they have their life there and everything, but I have my life here, and I plan on staying here, you know, and building my career here, at this point in my life, I wouldn't see the logic in going in a long distance relationship with this person, knowing that like literally our futures are going in different directions. This is different, for instance, if you are in a relationship with somebody, you know, you live in the same city, and then you get like an internship or something for a year or however long in another city, but then you're meant to come back. You know, there's like an end goal, you know, you have like an end date of your long distance relationship, and then you can be in the same city again. That's just kind of like the way I see it, especially, you know, in my specific case, as I just illustrated, like I have very clear that I want to build my life here, or at least on this side of the ocean. So if I'm with another person who doesn't want to do that, then I don't see how we could eventually end up living in the same place and carrying on our relationship. So yeah, that was a very specific example. But another way you can interpret risks in relationships, I feel like trust in itself is a risk. And relationships are built on trust. That's something we hear a lot. And trust is a decision you need to make every day. You know, every day that you're with this person, you need to tell yourself, like, I'm choosing to trust them and I'm putting my trust in them for as long as we're in the relationship. And I feel like that's a risk because, especially if you've been hurt in the past, you may be more weary to give out your trust to people and be scared of them betraying it and then you being hurt by it. But I feel like in this sense of like seeing trust as a risk, you really need to remind yourself that if you're not like at least putting trust in the other person, then you guys have like no foundation for a relationship, you know? Like a relationship is built off of trust. So if you want to be in a relationship with another person, the least you can do is try to trust them every day. And even if it feels like a risk, I feel like this is the risk that allows relationships to exist, you know? So yeah, sorry if my answers were a little bit scattered, but yeah, that's just really how I approach risks in relationships and careers specifically. And I try to be like rational regarding important things in my life. So this was me just trying to kind of logically dissect these very abstract and unpredictable parts of life. Isa asks for advice on trips / traveling when you're studying abroad. Now, some people may think like literally you're already studying abroad, like that's a trip in itself. Like, what else do you want? But for instance, for people that like me come from Latin America and they're all of a sudden in a continent like Europe, which is so interconnected and where there are so many things to see, while you're studying here, you're obviously going to want to see and visit as much as you possibly can. So I understand where this is coming from. I knew a person that came on exchange here and they absolutely made the most of the traveling experience. But I feel like that maybe got in the way of the reason they came here, which was to study. Now, obviously, you know, maybe studying can be like an excuse to come to a new place, live a new experience, and get to see new places. But I feel like, first of all, you need to have your priorities clear. Like, are you on an exchange to study, to work, or simply to travel? And I feel like once you know your priority, you know what other things can fall after that. For instance, in my case, I know that I'm here studying. You know, I'm here studying, building my career, and that's number one. So if I want to travel, that will have to come as a second priority. And that's why I won't travel, you know, during the week when I have classes, or if I have a big test, if I have midterms coming up, then I won't take a trip right before, you know? And I don't know, I know people that don't have that attitude at all. And it's like, okay, maybe the flights are cheap at that moment, but you came here to study and you can't throw all of that away, you know? So just have your priorities clear and work around that. For instance, I like to book my trips, obviously, for when I have holidays. But sometimes maybe that means that the flights won't be the cheapest. But I understand that's a sacrifice I need to make because I can't just travel whenever the flights are cheap. I have to make sure that doesn't interfere with my study schedule. Obviously, more advice is to plan ahead. The trip I took to Madrid, I literally booked it like 2 or 3 weeks in advance, and that felt very last minute to me. But it's okay because I was still like figuring out like what my plans were gonna be. But now I'm trying to plan my next trip in more advance because logically things will be cheaper and it will give you more peace of mind knowing that everything is sorted beforehand. I literally had no idea how like booking a flight or a train would work, but here's my advice. You hear all of these things, which I don't know if they're just like myths or legends or if they actually do something, but people recommend that when you're looking for tickets, you do so on incognito, like on an incognito browser, and you do so late at night and during the week. That's what they say. I don't know if it's scientifically proven. Those prices fluctuate so much, it's hard to even notice a pattern. But just to be safe, I try to do like my searching under those circumstances. A great way to get like an initial idea of how much you're going to spend on tickets is literally by Google Flights. Like when you search like flights from Bordeaux to Madrid, for example, Google will automatically show you like a little graph of dates, and it's like a bar graph showing when the prices will be the highest and when the prices will be the lowest. And it automatically does sort of like an initial filter, and it shows you like with which companies it would be cheaper. And honestly, it's a pretty good search engine. So if at the beginning you want to know more or less how much it could cost you, or more or less when it will be cheaper, that's a great way to just get a general overview. But then I think the platform I usually always use to find my flights, well, I probably consult with a few, because when you search like your destination, a bunch of search, like built-in search engines that literally filter through all the flights that exist will come up. But the one I usually refer to is Skyscanner. So you insert when you want to leave, when you want to come back, your suit, your like luggage, blah, 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 how many people, blah, blah, blah. And it gives you all the options. So yeah, I check usually through Skyscanner and then a couple others. And literally when you do this, you have a bunch of tabs open, you're comparing a bunch of things. But once you find like a flight that's convenient, you know, that you need to leave on this day and come back on this day with this airline, you can usually directly buy the tickets on this platform. So for instance, on Skyscanner, but of course they'll charge you a fee. So what other people have recommended to me is once you find the flight that you need, you go directly to the page of the airline. So for instance, Iberia, Air France, whatever, Ryanair. So you go directly to their page and you buy the tickets directly through them. And that way you don't get charged the commission that you would get, for instance, with Skyscanner. So those are the little like flight hacks I've picked up around these times. Obviously check, for instance, low cost ones will not let you bring suitcase. And if you know that you need to bring suitcase, maybe it'll be even cheaper to go with like a normal airline, you know? So be wary of that, especially if you're flying with Ryanair. Make sure your like carry-on is the proper dimensions, because they probably will make you pay more if it's bigger than that. So you have to be really careful with those types of things. And yeah, I always arrive to the airport super in advance because I'm so scared and airports scare me and they're so big and confusing. So I want to make sure that even if I get lost and if I make every mistake possible, I will still have time left over. So that's that. And also a great way to save money is obviously saving on where you're staying. So I try to organize trips to places where I have friends or family that I can visit and stay in their houses, and they're so kind and they let me stay with them. And obviously that way you don't pay extra for a hotel or an Airbnb or a hostel, which even a hostel is the cheapest option. But yeah, that's my advice on kind of like figuring out the logistics of traveling. And another thing I want to mention is kind of like setting yourself goals. So I have 4 breaks during my school year, and I told myself I wanted to make a trip in each one of them. So setting yourself like little goals like that, and then maybe telling like yourself like, oh, every like long weekend that I have, I want to take a day trip to another city or something like that. And that's kind of like a mechanism that you can have in place to make sure that you do give yourself the opportunity to travel, you know, and just giving yourself like mini little goals that you want to achieve. And yeah, I try to save up in my day-to-day life. That way I can splurge a little bit more when I'm traveling. But everybody has a different perspective when traveling. Some people would rather, for instance, invest in the transport. So maybe take like an airplane over a train, but then save in food and eat in less expensive places, you know? So it's just about balance. I have so much more I could say about this, so maybe I'll do like an entire other episode when I have more experience, but for now, I feel like those are some great starters. Well, that's about it for this episode. I would like to clarify that I am not a specialist. Everything I share is based off of my experience and what I've learned. Don't forget to follow the podcast Instagram at TheSTPodcast. I'm very active on there. It's a visually aesthetic platform built with interactive spaces for us. Please tag me on your stories and send me pics listening with your tea. Also, please rate, review, follow, and subscribe. Whatever your platform lets you do, it would help me out a lot. Because reviews are the only way I can start growing, getting recommended to new people, and being included in rankings. Plus, I read reviews on here, so if you want to be featured, go on right ahead. Please spread this episode with any friends or family you think will like it. I would love it for you to share your thoughts on this podcast. You can send me a voice message directly through Anchor or through my email, thestpodcast@gmail.com. You can reach out for business inquiries and set up sponsorships through there as well. Make sure to check out the show notes. There's a bunch of fun stuff listed down there, alongside with links to everything I mentioned here today. Remember, you can join me every Thursday for a new episode, including the last one of every month with a guest, and an additional bonus monthly Q&A. Thank you for your time, and for joining me in my little corner of the internet. I appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in, have a beautiful week, and a wonderful existence.